On today's episode of the Hot Nerd Podcast, we're going to talk a little bit about this idea of blame fixing nothing. There's a lot of controversy around this hot principle for some reason. I don't get it, but let's jump right into it. To another episode of the Hop Nerd Podcast. I am your host, Sam Goodman, the Hop Nerd LLC. Make sure you head over to the website, www.thehopnerd.com, for fundamentals, learning teams, support, and so much more. Send us an email, thehopnerd@gmail.com, and be sure to follow along with us on all things social media at the Hop Nerd or at Sam Goodman. Welcome to today's episode. Hello, howdy, everybody. Sam Goodman, the Hop Nerd LLC, the Hop Nerd Podcast, the Hop Nerd Sideshow, anything the Hop Nerd, you're pretty much looking at it. Here I am. I am your hostess with the mostest, or at least your hostess with a little bit of the mostest. Thanks for being here. If you didn't know where you are at the Hop Nerd Podcast, the main show. As I mentioned, we also have the sideshow. So those are two separate things. You have to follow along on those two separate things. You can probably find them right here. Like if you're listening on Spotify, if you just search the Hop Nerd or the Hop Nerd Podcast, you should find this show. You should find the sideshow. And then on Spotify in particular, we have the Hop Nerd official playlist, where a lot of the songs that I use on like Instagram reels or things that I'm listening to or things that I'm chatting with you about music wise, we drop over there. It's like 600 and some songs, I think, already. It's like 100 hours of music. It's pretty crazy. But I'm constantly adding more and more and more and more over there. So if that sounds like something you'd be interested in, if you're looking for your next jam, make sure that you follow along with that that playlist as well. But again, the Hop Nerd main show, the Hop Nerd sideshow. Before we jump into today's episode, though, do me a favor, head over to the website, www.thehopnerd.com. Follow along on all things social media, which means anywhere that you can like, share, subscribe, cuss at me, any of those things. LinkedIn is a good one. That's where I share probably the most. If you want less worky, more funny, probably, or less worky, more lifey, go over and follow me on Instagram. It's just the Hop Nerd. And then the platform formerly known as Twitter, X. I'm sticking with Twitter or Twitter X or X Twitter, or I think I like the way I say it the best. The platform formerly known as Twitter. Nice little callback there to the best, Prince. Come on, right? I need to throw some Prince into that that Hop Nerd playlist. Now, a couple things, and I'm going to shut up and we'll just jump right into this one, is make sure you, when you go over to the website, you scroll down to the bottom, you click join the mailing list. You'll see it in that little menu at the bottom. It's a great way to know everything that I've got going on, where I'm at, public events, all that kind of sort of stuff. It's just a good way to know when the podcast episodes come out. I share episodes from this podcast. I share episodes from the sideshow. I share recent YouTube videos and blogs and anything that I've pretty much done since I've sent one of those out. I throw that out there. And if you're looking for a hangout, a meetup, or you're like, you just want to know where I'm at, so maybe we can coordinate some time for me to come help you in your organization and minimize some of those travel costs for you and some of that travel time for me. Again, that mailing list is a great way to do that. You say, look, Sam is going to be in Seattle. We're in Seattle. Hey, Sam, what do you have any free days while you're in Seattle? I'm like, I do. I can easily move my flight and we will come hang out and teach a workshop at your organization or help you facilitate some of those learning teams or do anything that in this world that you want to do. I'm happy to do it. Speaking of which, this fall is starting to stack up. So send me an email, thehopnerd@gmail.com. If you're looking at getting some dates on my calendar this fall with some of that stuff that we talked about and more, you know, pre-hop assessments, learning explorations, learning team facilitation, learning team coaching, hop fundamentals workshops, learning team workshops, and on and on and on. You can see more of the services, and you probably already know it in your mind, kind of the stuff that I do if you're listening here. If you're new, again, you can go check it out at the website. You can see some of the stuff that I provide. Just send me an email. thehopnerd@gmail.com. We will get some time on the calendar. If you want to have a little meeting beforehand, talk about what you're looking for, happy to do that. I can send you over any of the information that you require, and we will get those dates booked. But the fall, there's still time. There is still time. But just from my experience, by the end of this month, my fall is going to be getting more and more and more and more and more and more compressed. Like the fall's going to can we say solidify? Is that probably the right way to put that in a very corporate-y sounding way? We will solidify, and then I will tactically execute my plan for this fall. So if you want to be a part of that tactical, super-duper strategic corporate plan, thehopnerd@gmail.com. I always forget to plug the books. Make sure that you check out the books, 10 Ideas to Make Safety Suck Less. Safety Sucks, the original book, and then the one in between there, Safety Sucks, the Manifesto. The 10 Ideas really focuses on how we do safety way better. That's really it. And really what it focuses on is actionable key ideas that I know from my experience as a HOP practitioner helped us a bunch to bring HOP to life in the organizations that I worked internal to, not as a consultant, but like it working internal. Safety Sucks and Safety Sucks, the Manifesto are more built around the safety profession. And so if you're more interested in those or any of those or whatever, they're there. You can find them on Amazon or you can click on the website. And then Starting Points, Operationally Curious Questions. I'm always shocked how many miles we get out of those cards. And what I mean by that is they just work. Like, leaders love them. The supervisors love them. Executives love them. Frontline employees love them. They're exactly what they sound like. They're starting points to have better, more operationally curious conversations. They're just more interesting questions. I haven't built any expansion decks or anything like that yet. I need to at some point. That's a plan. That is a plan in the back of my head. But check those out. The original. Check those out. They are available over at the website, thehopnerd.com/shop, which is chock full of all kinds of cool stuff. If you're not looking for, tools for your organization or a book to read, we got cool t-shirts, man. I've got to tell you, I think they are slick. We have got some slick t-shirts. That's because I don't design all of them, which is kind of cool. I do design some of them. I have some really cool artist friends that are designing some of the other ones. So check them out if you're looking for a fun way to support everything we've got going on here at the pod. So with all of that out of the way, that nice little short introduction, here we go. Let's just jump into this pod talking about this key principle of blame fixing nothing. A little bit of cold brew here before we get started, but man, we like blame. I have to tell you that I think that we love blame. Blame feels good. It feels like the right thing to do because it feels like we're finding those damn dirty, pesky wrongdoers within our organizations. Those people that take reckless behaviors, and they just do it. You know, they just take those reckless behaviors because they're reckless people. And they're, since they're so reckless, we need to punish them because the way that you fix those reckless or AKA bad people, those bad people within our work worlds, and we make them less bad people or less reckless, those reckless bad behaviors that we don't, the way that we fix that is by pain, blame. Pain, punishment. The conversation that whenever this, I had a great conversation with Clive Lloyd about this on the last episode. If you haven't listened to that, you should go back and listen to it because we talk a lot about the difference between blame and accountability and a bit of what this pursuit of blame costs us. And I'll tell you, it's a lot. I've been doing a keynote on that here recently, one of my several keynotes that I do within organizations around the price that we pay. And in particular, around the price that we pay for, air quotes here, human error in the blame game that comes along with that. Not to throw that at you right here. I guess to throw that at you. But if that sounds like something that sounds super cool to you, a conversation, a keynote that you would like to have in your organization, at your event, let me know. thehopnerd@gmail.com. I told you the fall's getting wild. It's going to be packed full. Hold on, more cold brew. But we had a really great conversation, me and Clive. And one of the things that we discussed is we really like to skip that principle when it comes to trying to bring HOP to life, to bring these ideas to life in their organizations. We'll go, okay, error is normal. Yeah. Context error. Yeah. Learning how everyone matters. That blame one, let's get good at the other ones first. Let's keep blaming for now, and then we'll come back to it. I don't think that does us any service. I just don't. Now, I think there's another side to this in application of human and organizational performance where we take that idea that blame fixes nothing, and we take it to the entire other extreme of our organization, and we say, well, that means that we can't performance management. That means that we can't coach people. That means everything is acceptable within our work. I don't think that's true either. I think that's a bit ridiculous, right? There's clearly behavior that's outside of the bounds of acceptable within our world and within our organizations. Things that we know that move beyond the norm of genuinely acceptable behavior. And what I mean by that are the things that are like sabotage and malice and ill intent. Like, I showed up here to murder a bunch of people. That's cool, right? No, I don't think so. Or my favorite is the fuck you guys. I do what I want. I don't care. Like, no, of course that's not acceptable. Of course that's not going to work within our world or within our workplace. I don't feel like it's that complicated when those opportunities identify themselves, right? I just don't think that, and opportunities is probably the wrong word here, but when those things identify themselves, I don't think they're that hard to spot. I don't think we're going, murder's good or bad. I don't think so. Again, these things are usually around those really, really established, well-known norms within our organizations. I'm not talking golden rules. I'm not talking things that make us know less. I'm talking like, I showed up here to cause harm today. And you're welcome. You're welcome for me being here. And Safety Sucks the Manifesto, we talked about this as being what we refer to as the shithead clause, right? We can't pretend that shitheads don't exist. Just because the majority of people within our world, and especially within our work worlds, are not shitheads, you will still have a shithead from time to time. And when you discover the fuck you guys, I don't care, I do what I want, I would probably consider that a shithead. I want to understand, but I'm guessing that you've at least got some clues that you might have a shithead. When somebody shows up and they break every ethical guardrail in the world and they're like, I don't care, I just forge documents because it makes life easier. Screw you guys. Not because we've burdened them with 47,000 forms and that we're forging documents and checks to get financial gain and we're stealing from the organization and we're like blame fixing nothing. Come on, man. That's not a, let's call it a get out of jail free card. I hate to use that term, but it's not for those situations. So it's things that we know, those well-established, well-known norms within our organization, just as we have those in society. It's pretty clear and easy. I hate to say easy, but it is pretty obvious, at least. That's probably the best way to put it. More cold brew. Hold on. It is pretty obvious as we start to identify those and go down that path that you have what we would refer to as a shithead. Now, I think I also have to insert here, because in the past, we have assumed everyone is a shithead until proven otherwise, which is not fair and is absolutely ridiculous. I've shared this a bunch, but I feel like if you put 100 people in a room, just in general, the general world, society, at least a couple of those folks are going to be insane / and or shithead, right? Like, it's just how it's going to play out. The vast majority of people are good. The vast majority of people are good people that show up to work for the right reasons. They're good people doing good things, doing it with the best of intentions, and mostly creating good outcomes. Mostly creating good outcomes, adapting through this work world that surrounds them, bending, yeah, of course, bending your rules. And then after you have an outcome, because this is heavily outcome biased, you're going to say reckless behavior because now there's a bad outcome. We don't like that behavior that was creating all that operational efficiency for us before. We didn't care about that behavior then, but now that there's an outcome that we don't like, now that it displeases us, it makes me go risky behavior, and that makes you a bad person, and now I'm going to punish you. The person that was a good person doing good work and creating mostly good outcomes before that outcome is still a good person that is doing good work and creating mostly good outcomes after that not so great outcome, after they discover an operational surprise. It's that old thing where it's like, you trust me to drive this $1 million piece of equipment, and you've trusted me to drive it for about a million years. The past 30 years, you've trusted me to drive this $1 million piece of equipment. And now I curbed a rim, and now you don't trust me. Now I'm a bad operator. I'm a bad person because I got it right 99.9% of the time. But now there's an outcome that you don't like that I have never created. I discovered this time. I discovered this outcome. And here's a million reasons how it made sense for this to happen. And yeah, I was going a little bit over the speed limit that you said I could go over. I was going a little bit more over than 4.5 miles an hour. I was doing 6. Reckless behavior. But here's how all of that made sense, how you as an organization under your leadership made it make sense for me to do that. But you want to blame me. I love this quote, and it's going to be a really loose quote. I know I'm kind of rambling here, from Jesse Singer. I got to meet Jesse in Austin, Texas, not that long ago. Listen to her speak. I was speaking at an event. I was keynoting there. She was keynoting there. It was a great time. And her book, There Are No Accidents, is absolutely wonderful. I'd encourage you to check it out because it is not a safety something, which is awesome. She's not a safety person. She is a journalist, which is really interesting to see that she comes to this, many of the same conclusions that we come to around these things, around blame and error and how we actually do this whole thing, right? How we can actually make things a bit better. Hint, hint, blame's not it. That's never going to work. The company that can't fix the potholes in their parking lot. Yep, I'm sure you've cracked the code on how to fix people. And the quote goes a bit something like this. Again, this is going to be super duper loose. Sorry, Jesse, but I really love this quote that accidents and accident prevention in particular, they're not about personal responsibility. That hits us right in our little traditional heart, doesn't it? Accidents are not about personal responsibility. They're about power. Hitting us right in our little traditional fields, because where do we always put that? That operator that we're just talking about, that curb, that ram, personal responsibility. They should have, if only they could have, and they would have paid more attention, not gone 6 miles per hour instead of 4.75 as the 47 signs that we put up, and we trained them and we made them sign that book that says they would never go over 4.75 miles per hour. It's about their personal responsibility. If they would only paid more attention and cared more about their own safety and cared more about us as a company, then this would have never happened. They're not about personal responsibility. They're about power. Who has the true power within our organizations to prevent events, to minimize the outcome events, to ensure that we have control around our critical risks? Who has the actual power within our organizations to do that? What does that power dynamic look like? We've always pushed it towards the front end, the last person that touched it, the last person that stood near it, the person that was operating that piece of equipment. Them. They can do it if they just pay more attention. If only they cared more. If only they followed the rules harder. Following the rules totally makes things not go wrong, right? It's about power. I love this quote. So who has the actual power within our organizations to improve conditions? To improve conditions that reduce the severity of outcomes? To prevent events where we can prevent events? To improve the context in which work takes place? It's not that sharp-end, pointy-end operator. We like to think that it is because that's easy. That's why we blame, right? It's easy. It's easy, and it feels good because they're the last person that touched it. And, of course, it's got to be the last person that touched it. It's easy, and it feels good. But they don't have the power to actually do anything with that. Huh. I love that quote. I love that quote, and I hope that you love that quote, too. Because when I heard that from Jesse, I'm like, winner, winner, chicken dinner, ding, 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 ding. You nailed it. Like, right on the head. Who has the actual power around accidents within our work worlds? It's usually not the victim. Yeah. But that's where we go with blame. That's where we go with blame. Now, I've said this before. We have good people within our organizations doing good things and creating mostly good outcomes. I think that's like the definition of most of our organizations. Good people doing good things, creating mostly good outcomes. I think you couple that with this idea that, yep, shithead calls, of course. But in our organizations, we understand that that number is the vast minority. It is teeny, 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 tiny. Even as compared to general society, because within our organizations, that is not general society. We have sorted and we have cherry picked and we have poked and prodded and tested and interviewed 7,500 times to make sure that we have the bestest people available. Right? We have gone through all of this stuff to make sure that that 2 or 3 out of 100 that we mentioned with general society, and I'm just making crap up here, but it's probably like 2 or 3 out of maybe 1,000 or even 10,000 within our work worlds. We understand that shitheads are not the norm, and going around and treating everybody like shitheads when they're not shitheads just makes you the shithead. Going around and blaming everybody just makes everybody blame you for being a dick. Yeah, it does. It does. It just makes silence in our organization. And as we say around here, there are many things within our work worlds that should scare us, but silence should scare the absolute shit out of us. So we understand that our organizations are built of good people doing good things and sometimes great things and creating mostly good outcomes and sometimes great outcomes. There are people out there that are just being reckless for the sake of being reckless. They're accident-prone employees. They are just more risky than others. They just don't care about not dying, and they just don't care about their... No, that is not... That's not our world, much less our work world. When we go down this path of blame, a lot of times, blame, shame, pain, retrain, right? That's really where we're moving toward. Blame that leads to us putting pain on people because we think with enough pain, we'll eventually fix people of their recklessness, of their poor behaviors. But almost always, what we're really doing is we're punishing somebody for something that they didn't intend to do in the first place, that created an outcome that they most certainly did not intend to create, hoping that they don't do it again. So we're punishing people for something they didn't intend to do, hoping that they don't do it again. That's absolutely a ridiculousness. That's absolutely ridiculous. It's wild. Now, we go down this path, as we said, because I think it's easy. I think it's easy. I think it feels good. As Clive mentioned in the podcast, again, go back and listen to that podcast with Clive. Once we start down that path, we kind of stick to it. We're stuck to it, right? And we're like, nope, we got to see this all the way through. We're going to see this one all the way through. And then once we do it, we never recover from it. We never go, maybe that was the wrong idea. Maybe we should undo this. Maybe we should apologize to that employee. Maybe we should say our bad. It's super duper easy. It makes sense. We like to try to find villains. And yep, absolutely. Now, let's go down the path of a bit of a tactical application here. I think this is important because I've been rambling a bit about blame and who has the actual power within our organizations and what our organizations are actually made up of, good people doing good work. Most create mostly good outcomes until they discover an outcome that's maybe not so great. And then we blame and shame and retrain them. Like, that's ridiculous. But let's do a little bit of maybe tactical operationalizing. That's a fancy word in our world now. We're going to operationalize, right? And we use it a bunch too because it's the only one that makes sense. but let's talk a little bit of tactics. And maybe let's talk disciplinary action as it relates to shitheads to begin with. Let's say that you do have a shithead. And I'm going to talk to you just like I talk to a lot of leaders, if that's okay with you guys. I hope so. The first thing that I ask leaders, because this is a tough one, especially if they've never really dabbled in this world. The first thing that I talk to them about is I ask them a question. And the question sounds something like, have you ever had actual performance problems within your work world, within your employees? The answer is always, yeah. And what did you do when you discovered actual performance problems? Well, I manage those performance problems. As a leader, that's on me. Like, I have to ensure that my employees are living up to these certain standards. I have to ensure that they're meeting the minimums that we require of them in this particular job. Okay, so what did that look like? Walk me through that. Well, we have it's not like the best, but we have like a process that we use for that. And, you know, I talked to the employee. We eventually got to a more formalized PIP, like a performance improvement plan. We work together. Like, I worked with that employee and say, here's what I need from you. Here's what you're giving me. I need you to get here. How can I better support you in that? How can we, I don't want to see you out of this job. I want to see you here. Walk me through what this looks like. Let's do this together. Okay, how did that play out? Almost always the employee recovers. Everything's fine. Like, best employee I've got now. Yep, best employee that I've got. We did it together. It was great. Yep, it was great. I've discovered along the way, too, that maybe I wasn't supporting them as good as I should have, and I worked on that, and it worked out well. So the first thing that I've got to say is that when we say blame fixes nothing, I like to rephrase that into blame stops learning. Okay, blame really does. It shuts down learning. They're moving in two different directions, right? It's really hard. Let's just put it that way, because people go, it doesn't stop learning. You can still learn and beat people in the face with a bat. You can still do. Okay, whatever. Let's just say it makes it real hard then. Yeah, again, does that appease the masses out there that think that you can string people up by their toes and tar and feather them and still get them to tell you the truth? You really think that's how that works? Sure. Keep living in la-la land, friend. they're just going to tell you what you want to hear at that point. There's a reason why torture doesn't work. Yeah, and what you're doing is torturing folks, and they're just going to tell you whatever you want to hear, so you will stop fucking beating them. Yeah, there you go. So I have to think we have to acknowledge the fact that leaders should be able to coach and performance manage their employees, and where it makes sense, they will discipline. And I'll talk about in my mind what I think that means here in just a minute. Because I think we need to reframe what discipline is within our work worlds. But of course, now I have to put in the caveat here that I think that it needs to be the leader that performance manages their employees. It needs to be the leader that makes these decisions, because a lot of times what I discover within our work worlds is we take leaders' ability away from them, of being leaders, and we move it higher up the organization, or we move it into support groups like HR or safety, right? If it's a safety-related reckless behavior, then safety needs to review this, and safety recommends disciplinary action completely devoid of context, and they're going to tell you what you need to do, or HR does it, tell you what to do, you do, even though you understand the context better than anybody else, because you are the leader. You know that employee. You know what they had for breakfast this morning. You know their wife and kids. You know their grandma. You know what their dog's name is. You know who has the softball tournament this week. You know who makes the best ribs on your crew. But guess who knows more context than you do? The vice president of EH&S. Nope. It needs to be the leader. We need to let leaders be leaders. That's part of this. That is totally part of this, because we have this phenomena of managerial override, executive override that happens, where we have an outcome that displeases us, as we said, that truck curbed, or that piece of equipment curbed that rim. Sorry, I got excited. Now my words are going to get a little jumbly. They curbed that rim. And, you know, the leader's sitting there going, okay, I can see this at tight space. I see how this happened. We were under a ton of pressure from the organization to produce on this particular thing. You were going 6 instead of 4. I get it. It's, you know, it's 2 miles an hour. I understand. You got a little fast around there. You had a bunch of radio traffic and people screaming at you. And you had this metric that you had to meet with this production demand, or else, or we're going to blow it. And this load can make it. And all the stuff we know kind of plays into all these pressures. All these pressures that, again, the sharpened employee has no power over. They're powerless in this situation. We like to think that you just stop, just slow down, just stop, just be a better person and stop, and this would never happen. But they don't, because they can't, right? Because then they stop and they blow that production demand, that metric, and then they get fired. How's that work out for you? Shit, can. Well, I'd rather see them in the unemployment line than curb a ram. Okay, sure, sure thing, sure thing. Yep. Back to you fixing people. Gotcha. Yeah. Almost always that frontline leader has way more context, right? They have way more context. Now, that frontline leader is going to look at this and go, I see how this made sense. Look, yeah, look, the rule says 6. I understand why the rule says 4, 4.5, 4.75 miles per hour, whatever stupid number we put on there. I understand. I'm not going to beat you over this. I get it. Is there anything, you know, I'm seeking to understand? I'm seeking to see if there's any deeper learning here, anything that we can do to make this easier for you, to make this more likely to go right. But again, I'm also, as a leader, going, it's a rim. Like, there's no major damage. You scuffed the rim a little bit on this piece of equipment. You reported it. Thank you. That's kind of cool, because I don't know that I would have reported this. You just scuffed the rim. There's no damage. The curb has like a little bit of yellow paint on it or something. Like, it's not nothing crazy. Nothing was hurt. You could have just kept on going. You could have just never stopped. We would have been none the wiser. We would have never even had this opportunity to tell you that you're a terrible person and blame you for curbing that rim. Tell you that now you're a shitty operator after 30 years of success. And we've never had this opportunity to feel good about blaming people. But so what the leader recommends? Nothing. Nothing. Well, that displeases those higher in the organization, or those in safety, or those in HR, or that vice president. The vice president says, damn it, I disagree. You do not take safety seriously enough, Mr. and Mrs. Leader. You do not take safety seriously enough, leader person. You do not. Because if you did, you would have beaten this employee. So I'm going to override your decision, even though you are nearest to this employee. You know what their kids had for breakfast this morning. And you know the work exactly as they were doing it. And you were there. I'm going to override it because feels better to blame. Yeah, they broke the rules. It's so black and white. They broke the rules. If they would have only been doing 4.75 miles an hour instead of doing 6 miles an hour, they would have never curved that rim and upset me this morning while I was having my tea on the golf course reading my event alerts. Really? Come on, man. Come on. I think we need to let leaders be leaders. And where in any situation where it is possible, which is the vast majority of them, I think we need to let leaders make those decisions around performance management and around discipline, and we need to avoid managerial override. I think that hurts leaders' ability to be leaders. So that's one part of this. Okay, that's one part of this. I said that I would talk a little bit about my thoughts on reframing discipline. Now, in the past, as I've so viciously made fun of in a lot of ways, is we've thought that through disciplinary action, we could make people be better people. Yeah, well, really, we could fix people. And as I've joked around, and it is a joke, please don't get mad at me and throw tomatoes at me. Sam made fun of us for thinking we could fix people. A little bit, but it's just in good fun. What's the old saying that somebody lobbed me a compliment a while back where they said Sam's really good at highlighting ridiculousness by being ridiculous. That's all I'm doing. So don't get too upset. Don't get too upset at me. We've historically viewed disciplinary action as a behavior modification tool that, with enough pain, with enough blame, with enough shame, with enough retrain, whether direct punishment or indirect punishment, we make people better people. That we change their behavior. Right? We change it. It's so simple. It's all so simple. You praise them when they do the things you want them to do. You give them pain and shame. You zap them. You just zap them with the shock collar when they do the things that displeases you, that you don't like as an organization. Can I just tell you, your employees aren't freaking dogs? First off, that you're dealing with adults here. Hey, can I tell you that? The people that work within your organization, the caring, amazing folks, the good people doing good work, doing it for the right reasons and creating mostly good outcomes for you, I think I need to add, they are not freaking dogs. They are certainly not children. They are adults. And you need to start treating them like adults. That's the first place where I think we need to go. We, as organizations, need to start treating our amazing people as the amazing adult peoples that they are. Is you really think you can get carry on like a clicker? You know, like the dog training clicker and be like, ah, don't do that. Don't do that. Oh, you did that. Here's a treat. Here's a treat. Here's a treat. Oh, zap, 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 zap. You work too much. Zap, 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 zap. Come on, man. Y'all. But I see it. I see it constantly because we viewed disciplinary action as such a simple thing that with enough blame, pain, or with enough praise for the things that we like to see, we change people's behavior. We change people's behavior. How's that working out? I'll give you a few minutes of silent reflection. I know how it's working out. You do too. We know how that's working out. How's that working out? If it worked, it would have already worked. Yeah, because we've been really good at it as organizations, as society, viciously punishing wrongdoers for a long time. Does it stop those things from happening? Does it really change behavior? And I like to always show that wonky example out here of speeding tickets. How many of you listening have got a speeding ticket? Now, I'm going to tell you, I've never gotten a speeding ticket. How weird is that? I don't know. I'm super compliant with speed. I don't know. And I'm kind of lucky, too, I think, as part of that, because I have sped and I do speed from time to time. How many of you got a speeding ticket? I would guess a good chunk of you. Again, I'm talking to you like I talk to people in workshops here. So take this for what it is. I'm trying to give you some tactical stuff. And we're getting to some more actionable things. So I'm sorry if I get a little ranty, a little rambly, but this is fun. I would guess that the vast majority of you have gotten a speeding ticket. How many of you still speed? How many of you got a speeding ticket? And how many of you gotten more than one speeding ticket? I bet a lot of you. How many of you that have got multiple speeding tickets still speed? I bet a lot of you. And the few of you that are going, I quit speeding as soon as they... There's always a few fibbers around. Yeah. I'm playing. Don't get mad at me. Jesus, don't get mad at me. But yeah, does it work? I don't think it works all that well. It doesn't work all that well because discipline is not a good behavior modification tool. When we pour pain down upon our employees, it doesn't really make them change their behavior. It makes them get better at avoiding the pain source. When I start getting speeding tickets, I just get real cognizant of where police officers sit and how to avoid them. And I buy radar detectors and I do all of those things to avoid the pain. If you are my leader and you are blaming and shaming me and pouring pain down upon me, you are the pain source, and I'm going to avoid telling you anything that I don't have to tell you. I'm going to avoid you, period, as much as I possibly can. Because most of the time, almost always, I'm not out there. I'm not out there being malicious. I'm not out there being a dick. I'm not out there being a shithead. I'm not out there saying, screw you guys, I do what I want. I'm not doing any of that. I'm just trying to do good work. I'm trying to do it for you, and I'm creating mostly good outcomes. And sometimes I discover operational surprises along the way, and when I do, you start punishing me for things that I didn't intend to do in the first place, hoping that it'll stop me from doing it again. And I look at you like you were a fool because you were acting like a fool. It's unfair. You don't make me feel more responsible. You make me feel more like a victim. How much accountability? How much accountability do we truly create within our organizations when we turn our employees into victims, when we treat them like children? I've got a hint for you here. It doesn't increase it at all. So this reframing of discipline, we start to view discipline not as a way to modify human behavior as a behavioral modification tool, but really as a way to remove people from systems fairly in which they do not belong. When you do have that shithead, instead of saying, I'm going to beat this shithead until they're not a shithead anymore, and that rare chance that you do have a shithead, no. You give them a fair shot at a road to redemption, and you use disciplinary action as a way to safely extract them from a system in which they do not belong. If you got somebody running around your organization that says, I don't care, screw you guys, I do what I want, I don't care, fuck you guys, I do what I want, fuck you, I don't care, lockout, tagout. I know you told me 14 times that I need to have a lockout, tagout, and I told you, screw you, I'm not doing it. Fuck you. No, I've got a feeling that person probably doesn't fit in your organization. Should you still be fair? Yeah. Should you give them the opportunity to correct that? Absolutely, you should. Should you see if maybe there's other roles within your organization that they might fit well into? You absolutely should. But it's the it's more of the emergency, the ejection seat. There we go. words come out at some point. It's the ejection seat. It's, look, you don't belong here. I'm not doing this to hurt you. I'm doing this because you don't belong here. You don't fit in here. The behaviors that we have with you are so far outside of our norms, so far outside of bounds. This isn't adapting through the work world that surrounds you. This is screw you. I do what I want. This is malice. This is sabotage. You're doing things that are unethical. You're doing things that are illegal. We can't have you here. It's not as a way to try to fix you. It's a way to fairly, safely remove you from a system of work in which you don't belong. Now, with that said, here's some tactical advice other than reframing. Just about every organization that I go to, they examine for blame and discipline first in their process post-event, post anything. Whether that's no outcome and just behaviors we observe that we did not like, or maybe a horrific day, and everything kind of in between. Oh, sorry, cold brew break. Hold on, ice. There we go. Step one, and this is quite literally written down in most organizations that I spend time with. Step one, did the employee fuck it up? It doesn't say it quite like that. It maybe says, did the employee violate any known policies and procedures? Blah, 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 blah. Very HR-y. Yeah. It says something along those lines. And that's the first step in seeking to understand is, did the employee mess up? Was there error? Was there mistake? Was there violation? Blah, nasty word. Guess what? When that's the first step, guess what you always find? Of course, you find error. At a minimum, you find error. You find a mistake. You find rule bends, rule breaks. You find all the stuff that we know that people do just to make work happen. Normal work happen. Yeah. Yeah. And if you think that there aren't violations and mistakes, and you think that there aren't rule bends, rule breaks, and workarounds, and people making do with what they got and adapting their way through the work world that surrounds them that creates most success work, if you think that doesn't exist, you're probably in the wrong place. I'm just going to let you know, we know that exists. That's reality. That's how people get shit done. That's how people get shit done successfully. You depend on those things, actually, for things to go well most of the time. You do. We have to accept that those things are there. When that's the first step in our process and we say, look for this, and if you find any of this, blame the employee. You have exactly 24 hours. Again, I'm quoting from procedures here that I read pretty regularly from other organizations. You have the first 12 hours, the first shift, within the first shift sometimes, within the first 6 hours sometimes, you have to decide if you're going to discipline this employee. And if you find any of these things, if you find rule bends, rule breaks, violations, errors, mistakes, you're going to discipline them. Because the HR rule says that you have to. And you that's the leader, if you don't, we're going to discipline you. How's that work? It doesn't. Because when we look for those things, we always find those things. And when we find those things, we always go down the path of blame. And when we go down the path of blame, we almost always stop digging deeper. Because why would we go much farther? It's so simple. You can't fix stupid, we like to say, right? You can't fix stupid. I found all this stupid stuff. And I'm gonna discipline the heck out of stupid. I'm gonna try to fix them, even though I know that I can't fix them. But I'm gonna try, and that's it. It's so easy. I found the wrongdoer. They did this. It had nothing to do with any of the pressures of the world or our organization or those wonky metrics or those outputs that we have to. It has nothing to do with any of those output measures or any of the stuff that we've built or constructed within our work world. It has nothing to do with any of that. It all comes down to that last person that touched it. Even though we have all the power, we up through our organizations, we have all the power and they have none of the power. And they're truly the victim in this because they're just the last person that touched it. And they discovered this operational surprise somewhere along the way. Even though all that, nope, they've had a rule violation. There's nothing else to see here. Easy peasy, lemon squeezy. Wash the hands. We move on with life done. The vast majority of the time, almost always, I would probably argue 99.9% of the time, you're not dealing with a shithead. You're not dealing with somebody that's operating far outside of your norms. You're not dealing with somebody that just says, screw these ethical bounds. I just break the law. You're not dealing with malice. You're not dealing with sabotage. You're not dealing with ill intent. You're not dealing with any of those things, but we treat those folks as if we are. The first step in our operational learning, our event investigation, in our first step in trying to make this situation better, says look for someone to blame. And we find someone to blame and we blame them, and then we stop there. And that's it. We just move on with life. found somebody to blame. We might issue a couple little stupid corrective actions that sound something like, we need 100% supervisor oversight in the field so we can make sure these bad people aren't so bad. Right? We need to do observational ballisticism, blah, blah, blah. We need to amend the procedure to make this that much tougher. But really, we just blame and move on with life. So a bit of tactical advice, friends. Something that I've seen work well, something that we did in my organization that had this exact policy when we first started down this path, is we moved that lever to the other side of the process. And what I mean by that is we didn't delete it. We didn't say disciplinary action can't live here because blame fixes nothing. No, we understood. Like, I think we can say, like, yeah, a good, fair disciplinary action process, one that's not designed as a behavior modification tool, but it's reframed as this is a way to give people a fair shake when they have performance problems, true issues, right? To really, if you get to the end of that, isn't designed to harm them, isn't designed to extract a pound of flesh from them, isn't even designed to try to fix them. It's designed to safely remove them from the system of work in which they do not belong. A fair way to do that. We didn't say we can't have that. We said we probably need that. We just need to make it like fair and better, and we need to move it to the other side of the process. We need to move that lever of disciplinary action from the beginning to the end. It should not be the first resort. It should be the absolute last resort. We should seek to understand. We should move from who to what and dig deep into understanding what failed instead of starting with who failed, who messed up, what rule did they break, who was the last person to touch it, and what do they deserve. Instead of starting with who, we would move to what, and we would take step one, which was examine for wrongdoing and punish wrongdoers, and we're going to move that to the end along with reframing what disciplinary action means to us. Again, we're not removing disciplinary action from our work world. We're not removing performance management from our work world. We're not removing leaders' ability to be leaders and manage those things and lead, right? To lead, to be like leaders. I think leaders need the room to be leaders, as I ranted about already. But we moved it to the other side. We didn't delete any of that stuff. We reframed it. We rebuilt it. We made it way better. And we moved it to the last resort, as it should be. The last resort. So we started with what instead of who. Instead of saying, how did that operator let us down? We said, how did we let that operator down? Let's start with that assumption rather than we're just dealing with a shithead, because we're probably not. Right? That's, again, that one's easy. You can kind of spot the shithead. They're going to be like, screw you guys, I just run over people for fun. Right? Those are much easier to see. Much easier to see. Sorry, I keep cold and brew. I'm trying to amp myself up with cold brew here, and I'm running low. I'm going to have to go get some more coffee here. We're going to have to wrap this thing up soon. So we moved it to the other side of the process. There's the tactical thing. Reframe. Reframe what disciplinary action is. It's not a good behavior modification tool. We know that. If it was, it would have worked by now, because we tried and tried and tried and tried and tried and tried. We know that putting that at the first step of the process leads us to view that as the cause almost always. That is, if we look for error, if we look for mistake, if we look for person as a problem, we're going to find that the person was the problem, and we're going to stop there. So move that to the other side of your process, because I almost promise you, your process says something along those same lines. Move it to the other side. Seek to understand. Seek to understand. See how it made sense, because it totally made sense to those people involved. It made sense until it suddenly didn't make sense anymore. Because you have good people doing good work, creating most of the good outcomes in your organizations. It made sense. They were just adapting their way through the work world that surrounds them. We seek to understand. And I'll tell you exactly how I tell leaders. Give what a shot. Yeah, move disciplinary action to the other side and give what a shot. Instead of who failed, ask what failed. If you explore the deepest, darkest pits of what, and you find that you need to come back to who is still there? Who's not going anywhere? Because you haven't fired them this time. Who's not going anywhere? You can always come back to who. But what I almost always find is that when we truly, truly explore those deepest, darkest pits of what, when we truly seek to understand, when we truly seek to understand how it all made sense until it suddenly didn't make sense anymore, we almost never find the need to come back to who, because we discover that this was a good person doing good work, creating mostly good outcomes. And for sure, we found bends and breaks and maybe what historically we would call a violation and errors and mistakes, because duh, of course we do, because people be people. And yeah, of course we do. But we see how all those things made sense. And we see how beating that employee is not going to make those things less likely. How beating that employee is not going to reduce the severity of outcome from these things. How beating that employee is not going to magically make people not die at work. That just doesn't work. What I think it really drives us towards when we move that lever to the other side of the process and we move from who to what and we seek to understand and how it made sense. It even back tying this back into some of that quote from Jesse Singer. Again, go read that book. There are no accidents. It's great. It's wonderful. I can't say that enough. It's wonderful because it's not a safety book. It's cool. It's a safety book. It's not a safety book, which is a lot of fun. I think what it truly leads us to are the things that we actually, some of the power here, that we as leaders up through our organizations, those of us with a bit of power in our organizations, the things that we actually have the power to do something about. We can change the condition. We can work on the context. We can change the setting in which work takes place. We can give people better choices. I love that quote from Todd. There's a big difference between making bad choices and only having bad choices to choose from. We can give people better choices, and we can make it easy, at least easier. We can do those things. Those are the things that we can actually have some influence over, the context within this work. The thing that we don't have much influence over that we've pretended that we've had a lot of influence over is how other people behave, the actions that people take, whether they have more errors or less errors, whether they have no errors or some errors. We pretended that we could fix people. We pretended that we could beat people into caring more or trying hardest. And it feels like we can, and it feels good, and it feels like we're punishing bad people and all those things that we've already ranted about and said, but we have very little influence truly over those things. But we do have power and some influence over the condition, over the context, over the setting. So again, a bit of tactical advice, move that lever of disciplinary action from the first resort to the last resort. Move from who to what. How did this operator let us down? Move that to how did our organization maybe let this operator down a bit? Seek to understand how it all made sense, because it all made sense until it suddenly didn't make sense anymore, because you have good people doing good work and creating mostly good outcomes, adapting their way through this work world that surrounds them. As the famous Todd Conklin, the GOAT, says, and I hear that he hates when I call him the GOAT, but in my mind, he is the GOAT, one of the GOATs, being as safe as they need to be, because that makes a lot of sense without being overly safe, because that seems kind of wonky and dumb and wasteful, and it probably is, in order to get work done, and they're almost always successful at it. Seeking to understand that dance of normal, everyday work, warts and all. Pain points, problems, errors, mistakes, rule bends, violations, yuck. Understanding how all that made sense instead of just starting with blame. And you actually stand a chance of making things a bit better. It moves you towards the things that you actually have some influence over, the things you can actually put your hands on and work on, instead of just trying to blame and shame and retrain people, instead of just trying to fix people. So I think to start to put a bow on this, and I'm going to come back to this, and I'm going to keep coming back to this, because this is a conversation that we keep having. Let's do a little bit of a recap. I know I recapped some of that one tactical action. There are many other things that we can work on here, but let's come back to a little bit of a recap here. What is your organization made of? Your organization is made up of good people doing good work with good intentions, creating mostly good outcomes. Do shitheads exist? Check. Yes, they do. But they are the smallest of the small minority within our work worlds in particular. They are not even the majority of our normal worlds. Most people are good people. We need to operate under this idea that we have good people doing good work and creating mostly good outcomes. That most people operate with the best of intentions and they're just trying to get work done for you. I think we need to add always, right? For you, for us. And they're doing the best they can. They're adapting their way through the work world that surrounds them. Pain points, pressures, problems, weather, other people, contractors, those stupid metrics, all those things. They're navigating their way through that. Those wonky rules that don't work and on, navigating their way through the world. As Todd says, the Toddster, being as safe as they need to be without being overly safe in order to get work done. And they're almost always successful at it. Understanding that, those better assumptions that our world is not built up of shitheads. It's just not. And our work worlds are especially not. When you find a shithead, this is pretty obvious. Screw you. I do what I want. I don't care. I came here to just murder people. I don't care. I just want to be unethical and steal from the company. I don't care. I just do what I want. I don't care. I don't care. Screw you guys. I don't care. Those things are pretty obvious. Malice, ill intent, sabotage. You're not having to go, is this a shithead? No. If you have to go, was this person a shithead? Is this person a shithead? There's about a 99.999999% chance that person is not a shithead if you have to ask that question. Is this person a shithead? If you have to even pause, more than likely, almost always. Nope, you're not dealing with a shithead. When you discover shitheads, we've reframed disciplinary action a bit to say that disciplinary action is not a way to extract a pound of flesh from people that have sinned against the organization. It is not a way to fix human behavior, because we know it doesn't work very well, because if it did work very well, if it did work at all, it would have already worked by now, because we've been trying this for hundreds of years at this point of blame and shame and retraining and tons of pain trying to fix people. Here's your doggy treat. Here's your shock collar. Here's your doggy treat. That doesn't work. So we've reframed what disciplinary action means to our organizations. What it means is a fair way to safely remove people from systems of work in which they do not belong. When I say fair, that includes pathway to redemption. That includes the opportunity to maybe move you into other roles within the organization where you are a better fit. And if even when that happens, we can still go down the path of learning, because we're not really blaming. We're not really shaming. The question that we should start asking when we have those situations where a shithead infiltrates our work worlds, and even a lot of times those folks aren't shitheads, they're just people that we mismatched in the wrong job. That happens way more than what we like to admit. Our systems of hiring failed us. What question should we ask there? We should say, how did this person end up here? How did those systems let them down to where we put them in a job in which maybe they don't need to be in that job? We found them a spot where they fit right in, where they do great. They excel. They have the best time ever over there. How did we end up getting them here? You can still go down that path of learning without blame, shame, and retrain. You can. You totally can. You can still avoid blame and ask that question. How did this system let us down a bit? Because they slipped through the cracks. And when you have a shithead, and a true shithead, not a job mismatch, none of the normal work stuff that we've talked about, but that person that doesn't screw you, I do what I want. You can still ask that question, because you've not blamed them. You've safely removed them from a system of work in which they don't belong, but you've not extracted a pound of flesh. You've not tried to retrain them. You've not beat them. You've not thrown that shock collar on them. You've not done that. You can still ask, how did this person get it? How did an actual shithead that intended to cause harm, how did they slip through the cracks? That's a better pathway of learning than just saying shitheads be shitheads. And that's it. Can't do nothing about that. Can't fix shitheads. So we've reframed the process of disciplinary action within our work worlds. Now, in addition to that, post event. So because a lot of this, I think we have to start with where we're at. We are very, very, very outcome biased, right? We don't care about any of this stuff. Error violations, rule bends, rule breaks. Not nearly as much, at least, when it's creating operational efficiency and creating good outcomes and all those things. But it's just as present there. All these things are just as present in highly successful outcomes as they are in not so successful outcomes and operational surprises. But now post-event, because again, I think we need to start where we're at. Instead of having that lever on the front, blame, shame, retrain, look for somebody that fucked up and then punish the person that fucked up. Instead of starting there, we move that lever to the other side. Instead of it being the first resort, we make it the last resort. Instead of the one focus on if did somebody mess up, and if they messed up, this is where we stop. Or at least we might pretend that we don't stop there. We fired them because they had an error or they bent that rule a little bit. We're still going to learn, all right, the crappy CAs, the corrective actions that we come up with related to those things, like more leadership oversight to better keep in check, keep in line these unruly kids that work for us, you know, those kind of corrective actions that we love so much. Observation blitzes, because, you know, we need people out there watching these people. We need people out there. We need tougher rules, stricter rules to keep these children in, because that's really it. We're treating them like kids. And again, we got to say that. We need to treat the adults within our work worlds like adults. They are adults. They're not kids, and they're definitely not dogs. So stop trying to train them like dogs. This is not how this works. Woo, got to keep ranting about that. We move that lever to the other side, and we explore how it made sense. Instead of asking who failed, we ask what failed. When we explore the deepest, darkest pits of what, and if we find the need to come back to who, we can. Who's not gone anywhere, because you didn't shit can them this time. They're still there. But we almost never find the need to come back to who when we really seek to understand how it all made sense, because it more than likely did. Because as people, we tend to do things that make sense to us. If it doesn't make sense, we don't do it. We just don't very often, right? Yeah. So we move that lever to the other side. Instead of being the first resort, we make it the last resort. That's a great starting point. Again, this is how we did this internal to my organization when we went down this path, and it worked extremely well for you. I would really love to hear how you're doing this within your work roles, because I don't think that blame fixes nothing means that we have a work world devoid of performance management or leaders getting to be leaders or coach their employees. I don't think it means that we just delete the disciplinary action from our work worlds. I think it changes what it means to us. I think it changes how and when and where we use it. I think it changes those things. It doesn't mean that you just have to accept what people go out and do when it comes to things that are so far outside of what we agreed, this kind of social agreement that we have within our organizations that, yeah, we understand. We understand that, you know, we have to bend rules, that we have to work around. We understand we have to adapt. And we as an organization, as this collective of people, we understand that we have to adapt to create success. And we also understand that through those adaptations that we mostly get it right. And that through those adaptations that sometimes we discover operational surprises along the way. But we also understand that, you know, I can't really control your ability to make errors. I can't beat you into making less errors. I can't beat you into not making mistakes, because mistakes are mistakes and errors are errors. And even what we call violations, a lot of times are just adaptations. We really start to grow this collective understanding that this is how work happens. But more than one thing can be true, right? We also understand that part of this blame fixing nothing, that blame stopping learning does not mean that, again, leaders can't be leaders, that we can't performance management, that we delete disciplinary action from a workload, because it does have a place when it's reframed and used not as a way to fix people, but as a way to safely extract people from systems working where they do not belong. It's reframed, and we move it to the other side. We explore every other option first. We explore every other thing first, and we explore it with that person. Not investigate them, not look at them as some wrongdoer until proven otherwise. We learn from them. And if we really get to that point that we say, listen, we explored what, and there's some stuff that we found, of course, but like this behavior was unethical. This behavior was outside of this kind of collective agreement that we have, these norms, a set of norms within our organization, that it really was someone that said, screw you, I do what I want. I think it's that balancing act. I don't think blame fixes nothing means that, like, nope, we just never use any of those things because nope. I don't think it means that. And I don't think the other side of that equation is any better. We always use that. We always look for blame. The middle path is almost always the path. The middle path is almost always the right path. So blame fixing nothing, it doesn't mean that you don't have fair disciplinary action processes that are reframed into something far, 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 far more effective, that are only used as the very, 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 very last resort, and only used in situations where you have true shitheads, where you have true ill intent, malice, sabotage. It doesn't mean that you can't performance manage. It doesn't mean that leaders can't be leadering. It doesn't mean any of those things. What it really means is that we understand that through this application of what we would call blame, and I think that blame and a well-reframed disciplinary action program that is used as a very last resort, again, the emergency eject button, more than that, this is the fix people button. I really believe that those things are completely different, that in the past, our disciplinary action programs have been blunt instruments of blame and shame and retrain. But once reframed, we can remove blame. We can remove the extraction of that pound of flesh from sinners and wrongdoers within our organizations and blame and shame and retrain you. Again, we've reframed that. I think that those things are different. But when we go down that path historically, as we have with disciplinary action and blame and shame and retrain, it causes us to know less. It causes our organizations to grow silent. And as we said, silence should scare the shit out of us. When we go down that path of punishing people, of pouring pain and just blame and shame and retrain down upon them, when we go down this path of punishing them for things that they didn't intend to do in the first place, hoping that they don't do it again, it doesn't increase accountability. It turns our employees into victims. You can't be accountable when you're a victim. It's real hard, right? So you're decreasing accountability with those more traditional approaches of look for wrongdoer, punish wrongdoer, fix people. So again, to bring this into this rambling mess, I hope this has been a bit useful to you. This is just me thinking out loud and having this conversation with you about blame and what I have seen work well. I really think that blame fixes nothing doesn't mean disciplinary action-free work worlds. It doesn't mean performance management free work worlds. It doesn't mean that leaders can't be leaders. It changes how we view those things, how and when and where we apply those things. It forces us to reframe those things into things that are far more effective. that instead of decreasing accountability can help us to increase accountability, that instead of just viewing these things as ways to modify people and their pesky behaviors, viewing them as the absolute last resort in our work world, that our first steps are always to seek to understand how things made sense, because they totally did, that we explore what failed instead of who failed. And again, we move that lever to the other side of the equation. The last thing that I want to drop on you here, and I hope that you stuck around for this, but it's a quote, and it's a quote that I've been using in this keynote quite a bit. I mentioned this keynote on human error, which is a bit different than our conversation than what we've had so far today. But it's this. We can't think about vengeance and do the work that must be done. That quote, as far as I understand, is from Bob Marley. So I say as far as I understand, because every time I share a quote, somebody's like, that didn't come from there. That's been debunked. Fact check. Okay, yeah, but at this point in our history, there are certain quotes that we just accept come from people because we've said it for years. So let's just go with it. How about that? Yeah. Sound good. So before you fact check me, that's just what I hear. We can't think about vengeance and do the work that must be done. That really stuck with me. I was on a plane watching that new Bob Marley movie, and I think that's where I picked it up, because I scribbled it in my notes. I was off doing hop stuff, you know, and I was watching on that seat back thing, because Delta's always got those fancy pants seat back things, which I love. Thank you, Delta. You're amazing. I love you. Thank you for always taking care of me and all that stuff. But that stuck out to me. I think it fits in well with what we're talking about. We can't leave our work worlds, our world really, at all, any better than how we found it, if we're focused on vengeance. We can't learn and improve when we're focused on vengeance. We can't kill less people. We can't stop people from dying within our work worlds if we're focused on vengeance. Because I don't know. I'm operating on this belief that I don't think people should die at work. And I don't think we can make people not die at work when we're focused on vengeance. We can't do the work that must be done if we're focused on vengeance. It clouds our judgment and it takes us down the wrong path. It leads us to try to fix the wrong problems. It leads us to try to fix people instead of trying to fix actual problems.
Thanks for listening, everybody. We greatly appreciate all of your support of the Hot Nerd Podcast, the Hot Nerd LLC. If you need a little bit of help bringing human and organizational performance to life, if you would like to take your efforts around learning and improving to the next level, yep, I can help with that. Head over to www.thehotnerd.com or send me an email, thehotnerd@gmail.com. Until next time, bye, everybody. Bye.